became aware of the power of conversation when I was a stay-at-home mom of three preschoolers. Friends would call and I'd talk their ears off, desperate for adult communication. If I remember correctly, some of them quit calling. When the children became teenagers, I loved driving them wherever they needed to go, as when there was no eye contact, they were much more open and talkative, giving me an important view into their worlds.
Too much of living, breathing, and being alone opened that window specifically with Agnes. When deep in the ugly grays of winter, I called her out of the blue to ask if she would simply phone me for just 1 week for 5 minutes, just to ask me what I was doing for the day, so I could talk to someone, hear another voice. Note, loneliness being one of our conversational themes over the last year, to make my long story even longer, before long it was Agnes who suggested that our 5 minute sound checks were actually interesting, and going on for 20-30 minutes, we would just take off. I firmly believe that conversation saves us. It heals and reveals.
And now, as a boomer who doesn't have any interest in retiring, I am rejuvenated, replenished by conversation. I'm cognizant of the power and the importance of both conversation and story. And Suleika, I appreciate always being able to exchange ideas, thoughts, and words with you.
Well, one other thing. Whenever I mention that our podcast is called The Lost Art of Conversation, the response is always positive. There's always an emotional response of, oh, great, that's a great idea. So going with that, let's go with it.
Let's go.
Good morning.
And good morning. How are you feeling?
Oh, fine. You know, I don't want you to walk away with the impression that I was laying in bed, eating bonbons, watching soap operas.
I was going to say it works for What's-Her-Name, but I can't remember What's-Her-Name. What was that show on TV? That's what she used to say, eating bonbons.
Who was that? Was that Lisa from Green Acres?
No, newer than Green Acres. She had a blonde daughter and a weird son, and her husband was a real redneck. Oh, it was like in the...
Oh, Roseanne.
No. Oh, dear.
Oh,
47
God,
people are yelling the right answer at us right now. Doesn't matter. I'll figure it out and put it in the show notes. Maybe.
Oh, look at you. You cheater, you.
Well, I just can't for the life of me remember. Oh, she's wore high heels and like just that typical, I guess, 70s, the worst example of a housewife. And I don't use that word often. Oh, dear. Oh, it's crazy.
All right. Okay. So how was your walk this morning?
Well, it was short. We'd gotten into the long grass and then you called. So I said, okay, we'll just take the long route home, which is what we did. And so it was nice, and we'll just head out again after we're finished talking. But it's such a relief to have school done.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just like I'm finding...
What's that?
Pardon?
I was just going to say, what's happened now?
Oh, well, his school assignments are finished.
Right.
So that's a good thing. And technically school's over on Friday anyways. So he's had his little one-on-one graduation, almost high five, socially distant high five with his teacher.
Yeah.
And, it's grade five and it is what it is, you know. So, but I just find for me not having to worry about trying to fit in grade five homework when you got a two-year-old wanting your attention as well. It's just so much more relaxing.
Well, how is the house thing going?
Well, nothing on the go right at the moment.
So they haven't responded?
No, we submitted a second time and they didn't even bother getting back to us. Like he said, oh yeah, I'll take it by the owners, but there's not even been they're really insistent, no dogs. There's been no response whatsoever. So that's fine, you know, like if that's what they are, then I'm not sure I want them as landlords.
Yeah.
The other place we've decided is just too trash. Like I cannot see a way to make that inhabitable, no matter how many coats of paint they put on the wall.
Yeah. Yes.
I was talking to a fellow next door. He had bought the house next door, and he's been fixing it up slowly. So I stopped by some of his van in the driveway the other day. I was walking the dog. And I went and said, "Is this your house?" And he said, "Well, sort of." And I said, "Not thinking of, you know, renting it, are you?" He said, no, my son and daughter-in-law live here." And I went, "Oh, darn." And so we got talking about the place next door. And in an ideal world, turns out this fellow's a contractor. In an ideal world, he'd love to own both of them because the house that we looked at, the trashy house, has just got such a bad reputation in the neighborhood. But he says he's got to get it for the right price, he said, because the only way to make it habitable, by his standards, is to sink like $150,000 into it after he buys it. So, needless to say, that means he's got to get it for like a really super reasonable price, which probably isn't going to happen.
Oh, I'm marveling at what you just said. The whole world of how things are defined is going to be changed. It's changing now. Nobody's going to get the price for anything they want.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, for him, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't need the house. It would be handy to own two houses next door to each other. But, and also then his son and daughter-in-law and their possibly future family are guaranteed decent neighbors instead of six students on a revolving door.
Yeah.
Who trash places.
And that's another thing. There's no students anymore.
Yeah, well, this is it.
Very interesting. Everything that leads to something is changed. My teacher friends tell me that UBC and BCIT, 90% loss of students in September.
So even enrollments are down?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're suddenly on the moon landscape.
But I think so many things need to be rethought anyways.
Sure. Yeah,
so
I agree
to have
with you.
That thrust upon us is maybe not a bad thing, as long as the right people step to the fore to say, "Here's a solution that's workable and reasonable."
The right people. There we go. No cynicism today.
Well, if I had time to fix the world, I'd do it, because Lord knows I have lots of ideas.
Yeah.
But you know, I got other fish to fry right at the moment.
Speaking of fish frying, I've realized that I have the Stanley Kowalski of garbage collectors every day now. He is the angriest, the most violent, the most arrogant emptier of those big bins I've come across in a long time. And he's the only one. I mean, there are 17 trucks go through here a week. But this one is particularly voracious in speaking out by the way he handles the bins. You have to put earplugs in when he goes by.
It's kind of strange, isn't it? You'd think something that was so rote as dumping a bin over your head into another bin, a bigger bin, would be just a standardized thing.
No, people are angry. People are upset. On very deep levels, I'm sure that we're going to see much more, what's the word, acting out? Anyway, I don't know what to do. It's so loud.
Get a bucket of paint or something and throw it over the, like, open, throw it over the balcony.
Oy. I saw a movie last night that I missed when it came out in 1999. And I've always meant to watch it. And didn't, but there was nothing else on my agenda after a big day of sorting things out yesterday. And it was Boys Don't Cry with Hilary Swank. Did you ever see that?
No, I mean, I like Hilary Swank for the most part, but I don't think I've seen that one.
You know what it's about?
No.
It's about a girl, it's a true story, who is going to do everything she can to have a sex change operation at a time in 1992 when it was still an aberration, still an evil thing according to the religious monsters who dominate our lives. And so in secret, she was everything a boy could be at 18. And her performance was so intelligent. I mean, it should be a primer for people who don't understand things about that. Of course, she's murdered by the people who thought she was a boy. And it's shattering. It's just such an important piece of work. But more than that, not more than that, but also equal to that, was the realization how much political correctness we have intrinsically accepted. This movie was graphic, so honest in its portrayal, not just of emotions, but physically, the sex. You don't see that now. That's 1999. And I remember in 2009, just 10 years after that, the most emotional movie that I saw between two characters actually looking at each other was How to Train Your Dragon. And here we are at 2019, and we do not have stories in film now about characters. They're all saving the world, but there's nothing intimate there. There's nothing that bonds us to the human condition except winning, which we now know the Chinese market has demanded and the United States market has provided. But I just marveled with all of that. This incredible performance by an actor, the story it told, and how far we accept, don't go there.
And promote it.
Oh. It's become, well, scary isn't the word, but, you know, there's an old saying, mediocrity is more powerful than bad, because it just goes by your field of vision. It's neither good nor bad, but it's mediocre. Mm-hmm. And we let that dominate.
Well, I've found that over the years, you know, you use that term, a person uses that term, the pendulum swings.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I find that pendulum finding its extreme swing is not a bad thing if it produces a new middle ground. A middle ground that's more acceptable. Well, I shouldn't say more acceptable even, but more real to more people.
You know, human beings are, this really is an absurd world. There was the New Yorker this week is load everything. Everything is about black power. Fine. That's great. Okay. But deeper than that, it's gone into the archives to expose yet again the Hitler story. And Ed Mengele, Mengele, of course, was the doctor who would experiment with people's eyes because the eyes were thought to be the genetic code breaker for creating the superior race. I'm really paraphrasing it and simplifying something very complicated. But the whole thing about the superior race of humans, the latest book has shown, indicated, proven, however we're going to phrase that, that Hitler really got on this bent because he was refused art school in Vienna because, this is it, the Jewish community had risen into places where they were the elite, and that wasn't acceptable. And I look at, that is 1938. Look where we are.
Interesting you say that, because last night I was watching, and I ended up watching the entire debate, I guess, for in terms of format, between William Buckley, and this is 1965,
yes,
I can't remember his first name, Mr. Baldwin,
and James Baldwin,
is it? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Black guy.
He's a black guy, yeah.
Yes.
And the 1965, the buffoonery with which Buckley presented his arguments, as though if I get a joke, if I get a laugh on this comment, and the way he, you know, he'd lift up his chin and almost talk down his nose.
Right.
Even to the Oxford crowd, which are usually fairly bright people. And I mean, he lost resoundingly in terms of votes of people that were in the room. But the intelligence with which Mr. Baldwin presented his story, and a lot of it was story, I use the word carefully because obviously he summed up a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. But once again, it was like 1965, and here we are how many years later? And like none of this shit's changed?
It's startling, isn't it?
It is. And it really justifies why this shakeup right now has to happen.
Yeah. It indicates that, but here's the funny twist, is that every new generation doesn't know automatically the past. Like, we're talking about it now. And so they have to, well, I don't believe that until I understand it myself. I mean, there is that whole thing, and it's the Mobius strip of shit thing theory that I have. We get it, we don't, but a generation gets it and then doesn't. And then a millennium gets it and then it doesn't. And that's the peculiar place where people with experience who are seasoned thinkers, who know how to argue, who know how to debate, who know how to weigh information, come up against. And I'm just going to say it in a sweeping generalization to make a point. People walking down the street, not looking at anybody else. Can you hold for a second? It might be my doctor.
Yes, of course.
No, it was just my posse of creditors.
Don't pick that one up.
I block them now. Where was I? So we have this generation thing. And this is where much of our fighting, not debate, fighting comes in. One generation just doesn't understand because they don't have the experience. We've read things. We've talked about things. We've looked at the Buckley interviews from the first time, second time. Oh, maybe I'll see it a third time, whatever it is. And will we get it, even if it's presented itself? That's a mystery.
You know, I wish it was as clear cut as one generation gets it, the next generation doesn't. Yeah. But I just watched this interview of a bunch of people. And yes, it was put together. I realize that he may have had as many intelligent answers as he had stupid answers. And I don't use that word often. But people, pre-Trump rally.
Yep.
And people who would walk themselves into a corner, like really easily, like they weren't even pushed into the corner. They just walked right in, set themselves up for the fall, and said, but that doesn't apply to Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
And, you know, and these are people our age, younger, yeah, older, and they live and breathe and walk among us.
Yeah.
And it's like, I remember the very first time when I had my wellness business, the very first time I had an anorexic bulimic as a client.
Right.
And talking with her and realizing that something that had never happened to me before is I had no concept of her logic. I did not see any part of the world or her or myself as she saw it.
Yep.
Like there was no, a lovely girl, but there was no common ground. And I struggled, and I told her that. I knew that this was bigger than me. I can help you with this eating program. I can help you with this in terms of what's going on in your head. It's way beyond my scope of ability because, like, I, how do you start to talk to somebody when there is no concept of a common ground? So it's not that there's no common ground, it's there's no concept of a common ground.
Just to add to that image, that very, very same sentiment. Years ago when I was going through therapy with grief, so that was a year after Peter died in 1995, my psychologist was in West Vancouver, and I got in the elevator one day for my appointment, and coming into the elevator was what looked like the mother of an alien child. She had to be maybe 80 pounds. She had hollowed eyes, and she was not of this world. And I just felt my heart. I just couldn't. It was so obtuse. It was so strange. I went to see my psychiatrist, and she opened up to me. She shouldn't have said this, but she did. She said, "That was my most tragic patient. She's bulimic, and that's her mother." And I couldn't, as you just said, much more eloquently than I can, I couldn't understand it. And I think the point you're making, help me out here, is that there are things we just don't understand, but they come into our world, and that's our responsibility and our obligation to the human race to listen to it. And otherwise, we'll die. We will become extinct. That's exaggerating, but you know what I'm saying.
Part of my point, though, is that when someone follows, and yeah. I'm not going to put people together. Don't let anybody misunderstand me. I'm going just for the extremists, the yeah. Trumps, the Hitlers. When people can follow them unfailingly, unquestioningly, even politicians that I think have potential or might even be good, I cannot follow them unfailingly. I can still question decisions. I can still question choices. I can still disagree with some of the things that they do. But when you know that there is no ground to be found in a conversation between two people, and the people that are following the extremists, it's just a bizarre concept. And how do you move forward into a, I'll say, socially sane world, because the word sane means different things to different people, but just a socially progressive world?
But it's never been that. I mean, that's where my logic kicks in. It's never been that. The Hitler followers were all scared because they did not want someone else having the things that they had. The elite of the time did not want a new elite. And that's anthropologically the simplest way of describing anything that Levi Strauss would say about kinship. One of the greatest anthropologists, anthropologists of all time, us and them. And we're in the throes of us and them constantly. But now, because police forces in the United States have military equipment instead of guns, just guns, they're outfitted with military equipment. That acceleration is something that is far more aggressive than the norm, if that's the right word. Everything's exaggerated. Everything is 15 times more explosive than it was 2,000 years ago, if that's making any sense. I don't know if it is. But we're constantly battling the Industrial Revolution, the Technical Revolution, all of these things that come through by progress, so-called, have a repercussion.
The trouble is, too, like listening to you say that, is that so many things, and I won't say all things, but so many things were developed with the best of intentions. And they've been morphed into things that hurt and kill and deform both physically and culturally.
I was just thinking as you were talking that, and we started off talking about James Baldwin, Go Tell It to the Mountain, 1953. his seminal work, and then much more after that. But there's a, if this is a bright spot, there's a resurgence of great thinkers who said things that count. And James Baldwin is one of them. And he lived most of his life in those shadows, being gay as well, but didn't give up. I mean, he didn't give up his own vision. And I come back to art all the time. We need artists to flourish so that they can express the things that we need to hear, because that's where it starts. It starts with that place. One person at a time can change things or start a change, but it has to start with one person, not a gang, not a group, not a division of society like the elite in Germany in 1938.
Maybe we could co-rule the world.
Okay, we can do that. Let's wait for that phone call. Okay, on a lighter note, I have to tell you, this subliminal, I'm going to call it psychological martial law that we're under, really became piquant to me when I was at London Drugs yesterday after my blood test, dropping off some film in my new expression of playing with my Nikon F3. And while I was in the store, I heard this ongoing announcement, new, by the way. Usually it's just music, but the voice was this chirpy, perky girl talking about COVID. And now that we're dealing with COVID, you've got to know that we've got all kinds of, and I was listening to this and I thought, what? Don't make this sound like it's so normal that you've got to put a chirpy, perky spin on it, because that's wrong. This is not natural. This is not normal. And we need to normalize it, but don't be perky about it. That's a marketing pitch and it's wrong.
Trying to remember what I was listening to recently. This is a lot lighter. I was trying to remember what I was listening to recently that I was the same, only different. And I'm going like, no, I'm sorry. This is not working. Like whatever this person was saying. And then as I listened to it, I realized, and this is partly because I was auditioning for a lot of, and I have in the past auditioned for AI voices, trying to, yeah, because they work really well. I mean, some companies work really hard to get them to sound, you know, like a Canadian female of this age. And, you know, do you trust this voice? There's a whole, all sorts of things going on that I never knew before I started auditioning. But I realized that this was an AI voice. And I went, they listened to 30 seconds, maybe a minute of this person's voice, uh-huh, and said, oh yeah, that's what we want. Uh-huh. Not realizing that by the time they finish a 5-minute spiel, uh-huh, it may not be appropriate at all. And it was really interesting coming to that awareness.
Oh my goodness. In other words, you're not, in other words, the world right now is not auditioning human beings. They're auditioning voices that will fit an automated robotic world.
Yes. And wow. Some companies will then send them out to, you know, like if they were looking for a Canadian voice, I'd get these little calls saying, will you assess this? And it was quite a huge, long thing. And I would say, you know, no, a Canadian would never say that, you know, just in terms of the pronunciation or, just a lot of feedback. Yes, it was, you know, scaled often. It wasn't written. There was usually a chance to write some words at the end as well, but it was interesting that there's a, once they find the voice, it's just like, okay, now we recreate that voice into an AI voice, and that's the way all of our announcements go. And I'm not saying your perky voice was like that, but possibly.
How about that? Mm-hmm. My take on it was, the subliminal sanitized message speak. And message speak is an old term from the 70s about how corporations would say something so that you would hear it. But that's what it struck me as. It was sanitized message speak and subliminal. You know, COVID, COVID, that's the way it is. COVID, COVID. Okay, all right. Okay, we have to do this now. Oh, we're going to do that. We're going to do this. It's the sheep mentality thing. Lemming. Lemmings are better. I'm a sheep, so I like sheep. The lemming mentality. The more you hear something, the more you believe it. That is the simplest psychological warfare there is.
And what you're just thinking about the announcement is how often, well, let's say when it first started, I think now same thing. It's just that's the way people are. But when your server came to the table and said, hi, in that just slightly higher than should be voice, how are we today? Are we ready to order, dear? And, I mean, it still irritates the hell out of me, but I know a lot of people that have gotten used to the fact that that's the way many servers speak to you.
Right.
And so the same, yeah.
Well, you know, funny thing hit me, too, when I was putting together a couple of notes. I'm taking your lead, by the way. Three top things a day, get them done. Three top things on the list for podcasts. But the other one was, do you remember being in Courtney? In the years when if you walk down Fifth Avenue, Fifth Street, you would hear broadcast on megaphones that were hidden in the street flower plants, a specific, it was music. It was just music, but it was music that somebody had chosen for all the town to hear.
I think it's still there.
Oh, my God.
I think. I'm not sure. But it sounds familiar from that I've noticed and going like, oh, we've got music out on the street. Like, you know, just subtle, but there. And
no, I didn't like it. My hackles went right up. It's like, who are you to decide what I want to hear?
Well, I've made that point when I've been stuck on hold at a company saying, okay, first of all, despite the fact that that is not a genre of music that I'm even remotely interested, have you listened to it? Because it is tinny. It's a dreadful recording. It is irritating. And now you have to deal with an irritated me. Yeah. All because somebody couldn't be bothered thinking of something better to put on the hold than bad music.
Good point.
Oh. Okay, we've come up to half an hour. You've got a call shortly. I'm going to lighten it up even more. And yes, you can laugh at me because I have to admit that I read this picture quote and didn't get it for approximately 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's a very wild looking man in the background with a big poster board and a young woman of color in the foreground, covering her mouth as though she's trying not to laugh out loud. And the comment underneath was, is that Mr. Levi? And I didn't understand it. And what the sign said that this poster, this wild-looking man with the poster board had, the poster board said, and besides which, my jeans are superior. And he'd spelt jeans, J-E-A-N-S.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it and I went like, okay. And I got to admit I didn't get it for the longest time. Levi being a brand of jeans.
Yeah, funny. I still remember Levi jeans. Yeah.
They're still out there, I'm sure. Oh, dear. Okay, that was my laugh. If you've got a laugh, and then we should wrap because you've got to get ready for your call.
I do. Okay, tomorrow at 5.
Yes, indeed. And I've learned from experience, I will never, ever drink a drink with ice in it again.
Oh, God.
Because my microphone is quite close to my mouth. So rattle, yes. Rattle, 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 rattle. Oh, my goodness. It was I was driving myself crazy.
Well, that made me laugh.
Okay, good.
Okay, we'll talk tomorrow.
We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay.
Bye.